Welcome to the Satellite Evolution Global Podcast Series, where we explore all things satellite. In this episode, we will take a deep dive into European space tech, bridging the investment and security gap. Let's get on with it. So, over to you, Hannah and Robert.
You're tuned in for another deep dive, and today, we're tackling a really vital question. Just how secure is Europe's future in space?
It's a big one, and we've got this pretty compelling white paper from Seraphim Space to guide us. They're major investors in space tech, you know?
Right, the satellite builders, rocket companies, all that stuff. And this paper, it paints quite a picture, doesn't it? Of the challenges, but also maybe the opportunities.
It really does. And the context here is, well, it's critical. We're seeing this huge surge in European defense spending right now.
You can't ignore it. I mean, you had President Trump pushing for more burden sharing.
Exactly. And now the EU is talking about potentially mobilizing, what, up to $800 billion for defense?
Huge numbers. Plus individual countries stepping up, the UK aiming for nearly 3% of GDP.
Germany with that massive $500 billion fund that touches on defense too. Sweden targeting 3.5%. I mean, it's serious money being committed.
It really is. And what this Seraphim space paper really hammers home is that, well, modern defense increasingly depends on space tech.
Massively.
Just look at Ukraine, right?
Yeah.
How vital commercial satellites have been there.
Oh, absolutely. For comms, for intelligence. It's fundamental now. Space isn't some future thing. It's happening today in real conflicts.
Yeah. And for a long time, European countries have sort of relied on the U.S. for a lot of that space-based intel, haven't they?
They have, yeah. There's been a significant reliance on those very robust American capabilities. But this paper argues that, you know, in today's world, that reliance, it carries more and more risk.
Okay. So what's the core issue they're flagging? What's our kind of mission here as we dive into these findings? What do they really want us to grasp about Europe's investment in space tech?
The main message really is this. Europe isn't investing nearly enough in the innovative space tech companies it needs for its own long-term security and, importantly, its autonomy.
Right. So less investment equals less independence, potentially.
That's the worry. The white paper digs into why this is a problem. And maybe more importantly, it lays out some pretty concrete steps they think need to happen.
Okay, let's get down to the findings then. What's the sort of headline number on this investment gap?
It's quite stark, actually. Over the last 5 years, Europe's only pulled in about 19% of global space tech investment.
19%.
Just under a fifth.
Yeah. Puts it way behind North America and China, who are really pouring money into this sector.
Wow. That's a significant gap. Wow. Makes you wonder about the long-term impact on developing their own tech.
Exactly.
But it's not just the total amount, is it? The paper also says Europe invests differently, like in different types of space companies.
That's a really key distinction they make. There's a clear split in focus. In North America and Asia, most of the venture capital, the VC money, is going into what they call upstream businesses.
Upstream. So the basics, the rockets and satellites themselves.
Precisely. The companies building the actual hardware, the launchers to get stuff into orbit, the big satellite constellations providing the services. The paper says about 2/3 of the deals over there are upstream.
Okay. And in Europe. It's kind of flipped. Less than half the VC deals in Europe are in that crucial upstream area. Investment here leans more towards downstream stuff.
Downstream like data analysis. Using the satellite info.
Exactly. Companies analyzing the data for different applications, which is valuable, of course, but the imbalance suggests Europe might not be focusing enough on building its own independent space infrastructure.
Sort of like owning the data analysis tools, but not the satellites providing the data.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. But if you don't control the source, how much control do you really have?
And this is happening while the global space tech market is actually growing fast.
Oh, it's booming. The paper points out that last year saw a record number of space tech companies getting venture funding globally. 601 companies.
601. That sounds like a lot.
It is. It's a 50% jump from the year before. So globally, this sector is incredibly hot, attracting huge investment.
But Europe's just not keeping pace with that boom.
Not really, no. The global pie is getting bigger, but Europe's slice isn't growing proportionally. It really highlights that underinvestment, especially in those foundational capabilities.
And it's not just the number of deals either, is it? The size of the deals in Europe is smaller too.
That's another critical piece of the puzzle, yeah. The average amount of money going into European space tech firms per funding round is noticeably less than their U.S. or Asian competitors get.
especially early on.
Yeah, particularly in those early stages. A typical European early stage deal might be only half the size of a similar one in North America or Asia.
And that must make it harder to scale up later.
Absolutely. Even for the later growth rounds, when companies need big money to really expand, the average investment in America is something like 75% higher than in Europe.
So smaller checks mean slower growth.
It can definitely limit how quickly they can scale. It's tough to build, say, a massive satellite constellation or a next-gen rocket company if the funding comes in smaller chunks. They might just struggle to compete with heavily funded rivals.
They hit a kind of capital ceiling sooner, maybe?
That's the risk. And the paper links this back to the VC market itself. The U.S. just has a much deeper, more mature venture capital pool, especially with big funds willing to write those huge checks that space tech often needs.
Whereas Europe's VC scene, while growing, isn't quite there yet.
It's still developing, yeah.
Yeah.
Fewer of those really large-scale funds available.
Okay, so we've got this clear picture. Less money overall, smaller deal sizes, and maybe less focus on the core infrastructure, the upstream stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's connect this directly back to security. How does this underinvestment impact Europe's safety?
Well, it circles right back to that reliance on the U.S. we talked about, especially for critical things like defense intelligence from space.
Right. You don't build your own systems.
You remain dependent on others. If Europe isn't investing enough in its own secure communication satellites, its own advanced spy satellites, that upstream infrastructure, then in a crisis, it might have to rely on someone else for vital information or communication links. That's a vulnerability.
But hang on. With all this new defense money flowing in Europe, wouldn't a good chunk of that automatically go into space? It seems like an obvious place for it.
You'd think so, and that's definitely the expectation. Space tech is so central now. Cyber, drones, electronic warfare. It's almost certain that a lot of that new defense funding will target space.
Yeah, if there's a catch.
The question is how effectively and how quickly that money turns into actual, usable, independent European capabilities. Is the system set up to do that fast?
And this is where the agency comes in. James Brueger from Seraphim Space. His quote in the paper sounds pretty blunt.
He is very direct, yeah. He basically says Europe can't just assume it will always have access to U.S. intelligence and comm systems for its own security anymore.
It's a strong statement.
It is. And it highlights why developing independent European space capabilities, launching, operating satellites, the whole lot is so urgent. He sees that $840 billion combined European defense budget as a signal they know they need to build capability fast.
So the will, the money, it might be there, but it needs to be channeled effectively.
Precisely. And the paper argues the best way, the most cost-effective, and crucially, the fastest way to get that sovereign capability is by embracing innovation from these newer emerging space tech companies.
Not just relying on the traditional big players or slow government programs.
Exactly. They argue Europe needs to move faster than that if it wants to close the gap quickly.
Okay, that makes sense. So what are Seraphim Space actually recommending? What specific policy changes do they think are needed?
They lay out three main pillars, primarily aimed at the UK, but they have obvious relevance across Europe. The first one is all about fast-tracking procurement.
Procurement, always a tricky one. What needs to change there?
They're calling for a pretty radical shakeup, actually. Procurement needs to get much faster, much more agile. It needs to actively favor innovation, especially from smaller companies, the SMEs.
And less focus on just backing national companies.
Yeah, they weren't against that parochialism of competing national champions. The idea that you just favor your own big domestic players. They argue the focus must be on getting the best capability quickly, not just where it comes from.
So prioritize the tech that works best and is ready soonest.
Speed of delivery has to be key. They say Europe should prioritize buying the most advanced, cost-effective, and crucially, market-ready space tech that fills immediate security gaps.
Even if it means buying from, say, a U.S. company initially.
Yes, potentially. At least in the short term, to plug those critical gaps fast and cut down the reliance on the U.S. Their goal is ambitious. Get new space capabilities, enhancing European security operational within 24 months.
2 years. That is fast for defense procurement. Okay, what's the second pillar?
Second pillar is capital allocation, basically getting more private money flowing into European space tech.
And what's stopping that now? Are there barriers?
They point to regulations and investment policies, particularly things that restrict big institutional investors, like pension funds, from putting serious money into venture capital generally, and especially into defense or dual-use tech.
Which seems counterintuitive right now, doesn't it? With the focus on defense.
It does seem a bit contradictory. So recommendation one here is remove those policy barriers. Let that institutional money flow into these strategic areas.
Okay. And how else can they boost private investment?
They suggest governments should proactively mobilize private finance for these critical dual-use space tech companies.
Oh, by the government investing directly?
Sort of. By directing government investment funds towards experienced fund managers who really know the space tech sector, the idea is government money acts as a catalyst, kind of de-risking it a bit.
And encouraging bigger private investors to jump in, like an anchor investor.
Exactly. Crowding in that private capital that might otherwise be hesitant about a sector like space tech, which needs a lot of cash.
Right. Pillar one, faster procurement.
Yeah.
Pillar two, unlock capital. What's the third?
The third pillar is government cooperation. This is about European nations working together more strategically at the government level.
What does that look like in practice?
Well, first, they say fully implement the Draghi report recommendations that's broader than just space, focused on boosting European competitiveness overall.
Okay. And more specifically for space tech.
They propose creating a pan-European equivalent of the U.S. Space Development Agency.
Ah, the SDA. What do they do and why copy it in Europe?
The SDA in the U.S. is basically a fast-moving procurement body within the military focused specifically on rapidly developing and fielding new space capabilities for defense.
So agile and focused.
Very. Seraphim thinks a similar European agency, maybe including the UK, could really nurture the European space tech scene. It would focus specifically on vital defense areas, intel, secure comms, launchers, satellite manufacturing, create a more focused push.
A dedicated engine room for critical European space tech.
That's the idea. And their final point under cooperation is about government-backed investment funds.
What about them?
They argue these funds need to be less rigid about geography. Right now, many can only invest in companies within their own country, or maybe just within Europe.
And the suggestion is?
Shift the focus. Make the primary goal closing Europe's security capability gaps, even if the best solution, the most ready technology, comes from an international company, maybe even one outside Europe.
So be pragmatic. Buy the best available tech to meet the security need fast, even if it's not homegrown initially.
That's the essence of it. Prioritize the security outcome. Get the capability quickly.
And James Brueger hammers this home again.
He does. He stresses that innovation from these agile new space companies is absolutely vital for tackling Europe's defense gaps effectively. The whole point of the paper, he says, is to give policymakers real recommendations to boost investment in government support, ultimately strengthening European security.
Okay, this has been really insightful. So just to sort of wrap up the main takeaway, Europe's seriously lagging behind the U.S. and China in space tech investment.
Definitely. Both in amount and strategic focus.
And this isn't just an economic footnote. It's a real growing risk to Europe's security and its ability to act independently.
That's the core argument from Seraphim Space. Yes, it's a fundamental strategic risk that needs urgent action.
And their prescription is pretty clear. Major policy changes needed fast. Shake up procurement, unlock investment capital, and boost cooperation between governments.
Exactly. It's about fostering that innovative space tech ecosystem so Europe can build and deploy the capabilities it needs for its own security in this century.
It really boils down to recognizing how strategically vital space is now, removing the barriers, and working together much more effectively.
Absolutely. You need to let those cutting-edge technologies flourish and get them adopted rapidly for defense.
Which leaves a big question for our listeners, really. We see Europe planning to spend huge amounts on defense, but what's going to be the biggest hurdle in actually getting that money effectively into space tech to achieve real security autonomy?
That's a tough one.
Is it the old procurement systems fighting change? Or maybe big investors still being shy about space tech risks? Or is it just the politics of getting all the different European countries pulling in the same direction?
It could be a mix of all three, couldn't it? Balancing national interests versus that pan-European need is always complex.
It certainly is. A complex challenge, but one with potentially massive consequences for Europe's future.
Indeed. How Europe navigates this space tech question in the next few years could be pretty defining for its security.
Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We'll be back soon with more analysis.
That is all for this episode. Until next time, stay connected.